cider. Grandfather was always into his cider. When he came here, of course, he only had the first farm, the 240 acres or whatever it was. And there was quite a few acres of orchards. So he started making cider like they all did in those days. Now his first press was the Whitbourne's old cider press, which is, you know, that post you go in the corner. It was up the top end of the yard, and it was a bit strange really, because it was like in against a wall, in the wall, and they had a gutter that they used to collect the cider from the apples, and I don't know where it went to start with, but grandfather piped it on down. But in the early years when he was here, he still used this cider press, and they had the big concrete square at the bottom, and they'd start by putting straw down, and there must have been a machine upstairs that smacked the apples up into pulp, and that came down a chute, and they would build up what they call cheeses. They'd have a layer of pulp, and then they put on some more straw, another layer of pulp, straw, pulp, straw, and they keep the sides trimmed down, and then the big top, which isn't there now, but the thread, which ran up the middle. Now normally you'd have gone at a horse or something to walk around to screw this down, but of course they were against a wall, so they had a thing which had a ratchet, and they'd probably did it by hand because you couldn't get horses in there, and they'd ratchet this thing down. And old Frank used to say, after the day, he said he'd have to come up in the evening and squeeze it down a bit more. And of course the straw acted like a filter to keep the pulp back, and the cider ran out. Well, grandfather he'd started to develop a big cider industry.
Really?
And he ran the cider down proper pipes all the way down to, you've been over the road, obviously, haven't you? To where Rogers Farm is.
Yeah.
And you look up and there's some white brick buildings.
Yeah.
Well, grandfather put that up for his cider business.
Oh, right.
And he had hundreds and hundreds of casks of different sizes, and the cider used to run down, and they'd fill a big concrete tank he built, and he had one of these hand pumps in the day. And they said they could always, he was sat on his chair, pumping this thing, puffing away on his pipe, you know, like they do, and they'd pump the cider into the cask and put it fermenting, and wait where you went. But then of course that was a bit of a pain doing that, so he had the most elaborate of its day cider press installed right up the end, and it was one of the best you could buy, because by then they bought one or two, the other two farms, and they had probably about 30, maybe 40 acres of orchards.
Yeah.
But not only that, he used to buy in apples from other farms, and they used to make hundreds of thousands of gallons. And they had this press, the apples were tipped in, because the buildings, the slope of the ground is like that, and they used to bring the apples up in carts and trailers and whatever, tip them in the big double doors, and then they had to shovel them into the hopper of this elevator that took them up to the what they used to call the mill, which
right.
milled the apples up into pulp.
Yeah.
That went down into another section, which again had a chute, which had a sliding door. And again, the same thing, they would pull it out, but instead of using straw, they had big slats. And you can still get them now for the people who make cider. Probably this big, crisscross slats of wood and hessian, which took the place of the straw. So they would put the slat down, hessian, they'd let down a lot of pulp, fold the hessian over, put another rack on, another lot, and build it up like that. And then the press was hydraulic, but not oil hydraulic, it was water hydraulic. And they had this big paraffin petrol engine, which used to provide all the motive power to work
the press
and press it all down. Cider then used to run down into these two tanks, same two tanks that he'd had before. And then again, of course, it had no mechanical pumps in there, grandfather pumping cider.
So why did he sell it? Did they bottle it?
All the pubs in the village, Newton Abbott, Tynmouth.
Or Strat Barrels, was it then?
Yeah, I remember going with my dad, because obviously barrels come in different sizes.
Yeah.
And they had a ramp thing, and they should roll these, because once they'd fermented and the froth had come out, they'd bung them down, and they'd bung with a bit of sacking around, hammer them down, had a cork or something in where the pubs would have their tap in. And then he'd roll down, and I was only a nipper of that. He'd roll them up into the van and then do his round to the various pubs.
And was it called Dawes?
Yeah, I got somewhere. It's where I got all my bets. I've got a stack of labels.
Oh, have you?
But they're all stuck together. Which has got you know that that book on the village.
What, the Cleland?
Yeah, that book.
Yeah.
Is it near the back? There's an advert for Old Walls brand cider.
I've got it in my bag back. Because I can take one for Glyn tomorrow.
Yeah. Is it in the back page, is it? Or somewhere near there?
Yeah, there
it is.
Ashill Farm Dairy Supply.
Yeah.
Far Old Walls brand. Bath and West Counties.
So they used to
supplied in cask or bottle, all ciders from local grainer.
Because they also used to do what they called filtered cider, which was, you know, obviously it had been filtered and it was the best you could get. And they used to have to buy in casks from time to time, of course, because they didn't last forever. And they'd buy in casks that had brandy and port and all that in them. And when the cider was in them, it used to draw the flavour of the whatever had been in there before, the port and the cider out. And that was really, it used to sell well.
Is that how this vineyard idea started?
Yeah, that's why we called it Old Walls Vineyard. Yeah. But they also installed, and again, it's on the video, massive great wooden, built like barrels, tanks. I think they held about 1,500 gallon each, which was quite a lot. And they installed them where Roger's now got his grain dryer, which my dad and I more or less constructed between us. And they used to store bulk cider and then have to pump it. And so, grandfather's doing this with one of these. Rode it on.
I'm fine at the moment, thanks.
And so that was big business.
Yeah.
And
I had no idea. I had top that.
Old Frank used to say, grandfather collared him, not only at apple harvest time, but about a month before he had to stop farm work, outside work, and they had to get everything ready for the forthcoming cider harvest. All the barrels had to be cleaned, they had to be burnt out with sulfur candles to kill any bacteria, get everything ready. So that, he said, that took pretty nigh a month. And then there was the apple harvest, which lasted another month. And then, of course, they had all the clearing up after it fermented and pumping it here, there and everywhere for a month. So it was
huge.
He was probably one of the biggest farm cider producers in the area.
Because there were quite a lot of orchards around the village, weren't there?
Because
all around the Cockade was orchards.
Down here. But do you remember, have you heard Boswell's farm? Used to be where what's the next development down? Lower Isle Radway? Opposite? Just down the road from us.
Radway?
Yeah. What's it called? Is that?
There is a Radway development.
Yeah, well, there used to be a farm there, market garden type farm.
Oh, right.
By a family called Buswell.
Right.
And they had land all up where our higher vines are planted and all this, that and the other. And Honeywell, Bill Honeywell?
Bill Honeywell, yeah.
He used to be a horse driver there. And he had all the fancy gear when it was time to tart him up for carnivals and the like.
Yeah, I've got pictures of that. And, and Gunnar Sjöland did as well, didn't he? He used to do the carnivals.
That all went on, but of course, horses was the thing. And I always remember old Frank saying to me, he said, Grandfather said to me, he said, we got to change over to tractors, he said, because, you know, horses is getting towards a thing of the past. He said, I'm going to give you a choice. He said, you can either leave if you wish and go and find another farm that's still running horses, or you can be just an ordinary GF, the general farm worker, which he decided to do. And then, of course, I can still remember one horse being here when I was a youngster, but the rest obviously went.
Yeah.
And then all tractors came in. But old Frank didn't want to get involved in tractors. He was a horseman, you know.
Yeah.
And what you couldn't do with a horse.
Yeah.
Could you imagine out in some of the fields are not all that big, and trying to turn a couple of horses pulling a plough, and other equipment.
Yeah. They still have some of that equipment up at the ploughing when they do the
thing
up at Pump Farm, don't they?
Is that in this year, is it? Because it's alternate with the.
Yeah, I don't know that they're doing. I don't think they're doing the vintage rally this year.
Oh, are they?
I don't think they are, because I've been asking about it, and I don't.
Because they used to do the one down on the village green, the fair.
The carnival, the fair.
Next year they'd be up.
That's right, and then they've had the vintage rally up top, and they had the ploughing in the field down the way, didn't they? It's quite interesting.
One of the old tractors that I bought off my cousin for the engine and gearbox. When we first started here, I'll call him my son-in-law, but he isn't really, he's my daughter's partner, is into tractor restoration.
Okay.
I bought it off Roger for 200 quid for parts, because it had been stood idle in the Brimbles for, a lot of people don't understand when I say Brimbles.
What's the Brimbles?
Brambles. I bought it for parts, but he's bought it off of me, and he's restoring it.
Oh, really?
And I was hoping that if they had another ploughing dude out there, I'd find myself a plough, because I used to enjoy my ploughing. I used to plough nearly all the arable land here until Roger took it over for me, and that was something else which made me quite cross. I really enjoyed my ploughing, and I'd go back and do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't, it's too wet, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Have another drink.
Right, have a little. Let me just check this. So make sure it's not. Oh no, it's still got loads of battery.
To charge it.
No, it's all right. There's plenty of battery. Right. Yeah, plenty of battery.
So so you know all these things. Now, where have we got to? Tide of production. But you know,
how did it end up being a vineyard then?
Ah, well, back in 2000 and, no, late 80s, 90s rather, I pulled out the farm. But because I was a partner, along with Roger and his father and my father, I had to have my quarter share out. So it was worked out. I wanted a bit of land because I had horses still. So we had the 6 acres. The vineyard, the bulk of the vineyard is on now.
Yeah.
We had the farmhouse where Rhoda is, because I was already living in there.
Yeah.
We had the farm, redundant farm builders, although we couldn't occupy them for a year because Roger was still using them for stock, and he had to put new buildings up to replace them. Well, that was fine. And we had a cash adjustment to make the quarter. Oh, we had a property down Redway Street, which eventually we moved on. All these places we've moved on, and I wish we hadn't, eh? Anyway.
Oh, worth a fortune, eh?
Yeah. So, I didn't do a lot for 12 months. But then we had to get our act together, and there was an architect in Timoth at the time. He came, a friend of ours called Paul Chappell, who actually put the idea into our head to start a vineyard.
Oh, really?
Because we were then trying to get permission for the winery, and he said, well, if you've got an established sort of business, they're going to look a bit more favourably on it.
Yeah.
So we, when the horses had gone, we gradually, over 3 or 4 years, planted all the vines from 2002, 2003, 2004 and 2005.
So was the cider business still going then?
No,
that finished
in the, well, when we say, let me see, early to mid 60s.
Right.
Because we didn't have the press, we didn't make our own by then. We used to sell the apples over the river to the cider makers over there. Yeah. Because after the war, apparently, the drinking changed from cider to beer. And the trade began to drop off.
Yeah.
So we just ended up selling the apples. Yeah. And when we couldn't sell them any longer, we ripped the trees out, to be honest.
So was there any history of there being vines here?
No.
Way, way back?
Well, they reckon the Romans might have, because they were here.
Yeah. Well, it's the right sort of land for it, isn't it? South facing.
I mean, a lot of people, like old Phil Gordon and the like, he said, oh yeah, you can see where the vineyards will be. There's all this terracing. It wasn't, it's where cattle have been walking to and fro. All the street fields have got tracks where the cattle would walk constantly, and of course it got like this.
Yeah.
But apart from what the Romans might or might not have done.
Yeah. Quite a brave move then, isn't it, really?
Well, I had to do something, I suppose, and, you know, growing something was as near as I could get to that. So that's what we did. Now then, what else have I got here? Just a little, because I wrote this as I sort of thought about it. Of course, in the early days, all the tools were hand tools, scythes, sickles, pitchforks, you know, and all that sort of thing, thatching tools. And grain, of course, was in sacks anyway. They had no thought of bulk sacks. Now, you know about the barn fires we had over the way, do you?
No, I don't.
Right. First fire we had, I don't know when this would have been, early 70s. That's right, because my dad had his stroke in his heart attack, so he wasn't active. We were over in the house, that's with my first wife, over where Rhoda is.
Right.
We'd gone to bed, and then somebody comes hammering on the door. I don't know what it was, 11, 12 o'clock at night, I suppose. So I put my head out the window. I said, whatever's the matter? He said, did you know your barns were on fire? I obviously said no. I thought he meant out here, but it wasn't. It was over there. And so I got dressed hurriedly and went over, drove over, I think. And as soon as I rounded that bend over there, I've never seen anything like it. It was just one mass of fire glowing. Because it started, how it started was this. It was in March time, I think. We were up in the fields of a weekend drilling, planting corn. And obviously came back at the end of the day. Unbeknown to us, there was a trip from out over Dartmoor, a sort of a Borstoy type place. I think I could actually take you to where it is. They had a day trip, these youngsters, to Tynmouth.
Right.
Now, one of them lived in the village, or was fostered to people in the village before he got put in this place. So he and his mate skived off from the thing, and they came here. Well, as things were over there then, we had the barn, the big Dutch barn, the silage pit, which was hay and straw, or straw probably, on the top of the silage, up to the eaves. And then following on from there, all but down to the road edge, was what we called the straw barn, full of thousands of bales of straw. And they'd gone in there, and the stupid people had lit a fire in a tin box. Well, you can imagine what happened. It set fire to everything. One of them ran out. I don't know whether they tried to put it out or not, I don't know, but one of them got a bit singed. He ran out, ran down the village to the main road, got picked up by a passing car who was a bit suspicious why he was burnt and that, took him to Newton Abbot Police Station. In the meanwhile, his mate was trapped in there and he was burnt to death.
Oh my God.
So the fire brigade were obviously here in force at that point, but they decided then to just let it burn itself out. You'd never put it out.
Did they know there was somebody in there?
They didn't at the time, but then the word came back from Newton Abbot Police Station, there was a possibility of somebody in there. So then they had to treat that with a bit more caution, and they found what was left of him. I mean, I don't want to go into too details, but we were there trying to, because we had to pull tractors out of the way and all sorts of. So that was that.
So when how long ago was this?
Oh, crikey, early 70s.
Right.
And then I'd left the farm, because it was all like wooden buildings, just went, you know. And then Roger had another fire over there. Now this must have been, when did I leave the fire? 80s? Yeah, it must have been early 90s. He had another fire at exactly the same place.
Right.
Never established how that started, but of course it burnt everything again. The barn we'd replaced the first time, burnt down. The combine went, the tractors went, everything went. So it was all rebuilt again.
God.
But I think that was possibly electrical fault in the tractor or something. Right. Because nobody was ever found or never.
Right.
So that was two. And that followed, of course, the fire in, when was it, 18? World Wars? 18 something? When the old barns, which were predominantly thatched in those days, burnt down. Is there a report in, is it in paperwork somewhere? Have you seen that? No,
I was going to say, because we're in the newspaper archive, you usually pull up anything that's in the papers about anything like that.
Apparently, they all burnt down, and they were rebuilt, because that's the only buildings that, not the Whitburns, it had been firs and that by then, I guess, they were rebuilt. And that was some of the first galvanised iron that was used for the roofing.
Oh, right.
And it was so thick. Yeah. A lot of it is still there now.
Yeah.
But so that, and you can still see in that some of the perimeter walls, which were the backs of the farm buildings, timber that they used to lay in to put the floor joists on.
Oh, yeah.
Still, you can see where it was burnt. It's still there now.
Really?
Yeah. So that was from 18, I can't remember the date, 18, something or other.
Oh, I'll have a look at this, at that on the newspaper archive, because it's amazing what you could pull up.
There was a report, just words to the effect, there's a report in the Western Morning News that the barns at Old Walls had burnt down.
Right. Yeah. Because I've been reading some of Philip Gord's stuff, and he was talking about when they used to go out as beaters and they used to deliver the food and the drink to the guys on the chutes. And
for the chutes. Yeah.
And him and his mate got accosted by this bloke who wanted something to eat, and it turned out to be an escaped prisoner from Dartmouth.
Right.
Pulled it all up on the he'd got the date wrong, but everything else was on the newspaper report.
I hadn't heard of that. Well, that's about, I mean, I could have go on forever, I suppose.
Oh, that's lovely. If you can find the DVD, I'd love to.
Yeah, well, it's there. I'll find it out. In fact, I might have got two copies, I'm not sure.
Because we can digitise it and you can have it back, but we can digitise it with your permission. We can put it up and illustrate it with your talk.
There is people in the village who've seen it, and there may be one or two illegal copies kicking about. I don't know.
Well, it was Sheila that told me about it.
Yeah.
And she said she had a copy at one point.
It's farm work mixed up with weddings.
Yeah, well, that's lovely though, isn't it?
They used to use the old bowling green, which was down the back of the garage. They always used to go up there to have the wedding.
The wedding photos.
Did Sheila say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And but like I say, I'm not. Well, obviously I'm a bishop boy because I've been here all my life. But I never used to spend. All my friends, my cousins, and other friends always used to come up here to play on the farm. Yeah. You know, we never really went down there much.
Because Sheila's dad grew up just down the road, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, where Sheila is now.
No, I mean, her dad actually grew up just down the road from here. Was it Lower Radway Farm? Just down the hill? Sheila's father, Skinner.
Skinner?
Sid Skinner, yeah. Was Sid, wasn't it? Sid Skinner?
Well, Sheila's father.
No, I've got it. I've got it wrong. It's not his father. It's Philip Gore's father.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Philip
Gore.
Gore's father. Yeah,
Gore obviously started off with buses and lorries for removing furniture. They built the house down the bottom of Radway Hill.
That one with the Italian garden.
No, further down than that.
Further down. Okay.
Go past the school canteen or the scale up down to the bottom. And you've got the lane that goes over to where Joe Head lives.
Yeah.
Right opposite that, you've got two terrace houses, and then the next one up. It's got like a garagey thing to the...
Oh, right.
That was built for old Mr. Gord and his wife.
Oh, right.
But where they lived while they were building the business, I don't know.
No, I think it's definitely in this story that I've been... Because there was a fire. There used to be a pub, didn't there?
Yes.
There was a fire.
Yeah.
And the firemen had to go down and get the horse and get some water. The whole row was alight by the time we got back.
Yeah. Just at the top of Redway Hill, there was a pub there.
Yeah. Was Verbena Terrace, the little brick
built ones? Well, I suppose.
Ones. Yeah.
Now you got me thinking... I think Gord's had a fire as well in there where they used to keep their buses and that.
Do you remember? They might have, at
one point.
Because Philip actually wrote his life at least up until the end of the war.
Yeah.
So I've got all that ready to go. Well, it's on the website. I'm just editing it.
He used to do a lot of. He came up to the farmhouse and talked to tangent ladies about things, because he used to do a lot of talks or guided tours up at Lord Clifford's place.
Oak Brook.
But you know, I could go on and on.
No, this is lovely. If you can find me we can always talk again.
Okay, in a minute before you go.
We can always talk again, can't we? I'll turn this off now because this poor lady's got to transcribe this.
Okay.
I sent... Not Rhoda.
It's all jumbled up though. That's a...